Now you don't have to stay linked to your desktop or laptop. Take Voice America on the go and listen anywhere. Get our mobile app for iPhone, BlackBerry, or Android at the Apple iTunes App Store, BlackBerry App World, or Android Market.
The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Sports Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericasports.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
No, he didn't slam you, he didn't bump you, he didn't nudge you, he rubbed you. And rubbing, son, is racing.
Gentlemen, start your engines.
This is Pit Pass USA, the fastest auto racing location on the internet, with the latest news, the best interviews, and our own brand of commentary. Here's your host, Larry Henry.
Hi again, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Pit Pass USA. Glad to have you on board. Hopefully you had a great Memorial Day weekend. I OD'd on auto racing on Sunday. I got up early, watched the Monaco Grand Prix. Then I watched, of course, the Indianapolis 500, got a little nap in, and watched the Coca-Cola 600 from Charlotte. So a little bit of overload on racing, but hey, when you get a weekend like that and a day like that, you got to take advantage of it, and hopefully you did too, wherever you were, and hopefully you stayed cool, because we had 95-degree temperatures here in Indiana. This week, we're going to focus a lot on the Chevrolet Detroit Belle Isle Grand Prix. It is back this year after almost a four-year hiatus. Roger Penske is the promoter. We're going to talk IndyCar. We will do that with the Indianapolis 500 winner, Dario Franchitti. We will talk Grand Am Rolex Series, which is racing there with John Pugh, who is a co-driver in the number 60 Michael Schenck racing machine. We will talk also the World Challenge, Pirelli World Challenge, with Johnny O'Connell. And we're going to throw in a NASCAR with, how about, one of the new Hall of Fame inductees, Leonard Wood. All of that tonight here on Pit Pass USA. Well, it was a great 96th running of the Indianapolis 500 on Sunday. And joining me now is the three-time winner of the Indianapolis 500, Dario Franchitti. Dario, congratulations.
Thank you, Larry.
Just an amazing day all around. Great racing, lots of lead changes, and you... What a dramatic way to do it, to spin out in the pits, get turned around early on in the race, and then have that wild final lap there with Takuma Sato going into turn one to survive that and get the win.
Yeah, we didn't make it easy, did we? It was, absolutely. As you said, that getting spun at the first pit stop was tough, and I think that showed how good the target car was, being able to come back from that. Get back into the fight for the lead, and then there was that sort of moment when Scott and I were passing the lead back and forwards, and then Sato got involved, and you know that last lap move that he tried, and you know, losing it and then hitting us, it was a mad finish.
I was having a little deja vu. It reminded me of 1989 as we were coming down with a couple of laps to go, and it happened over in the third turn at Indianapolis, where Emerson Fittipaldi and Al Unser Jr. went in side by side, and neither was going to lift with the race on the line, and of course that one, Al hit the wall, and Emma was able to go on. Obviously, Sato hit the wall there, and you somehow, even though you got clipped, were able to go on. Were you worried you were going to make it around three-quarters of a lap more?
Oh, no, I was okay. Trust me, I would have had to drag the thing around. I would have done it. But, you know, when Sato started to spin, you know, I felt that it was a fairly sizable hit. So I was glad that I gave him, you know, more space than I was first thinking of giving him, because otherwise I think we'd have both ended up hard into the wall. And I definitely was like you, I think, Larry, thinking of Emo and Al Jr.
Yeah, it was incredible to think how that was so similar to what happened back in 1989. But I got to tell you, at the end of the race, you came around under the caution flag to the checkered, and I thought it was so great. You were on point. Scott Dixon is your wingman on the left. Tony Kanaan is your wingman on the right, kind of a V pattern going across that start-finish line, and I thought, it was such a tribute to Dan Weldon, because you're the three closest friends Danny had. I tell you what, I almost teared up then. I thought it was just so cool.
Yeah, when I saw what the boys were doing, I had the same reaction as you. You know, that was very, very special. And obviously yesterday was a lot about the tribute to Dan from the fans, from the drivers, from the teams, and what Tony and Scott did at the end there was just great. And it was pointed out to me last night. I didn't really remember that we were we along with his brothers, we were the three guys that helped carry his coffin. And I thought that the fact that we finished 1-2-3 yesterday was just shows how crazy this life is.
Yeah, it is, and I could just almost see Danny's little quirky smile he had at that point in time. As we all know, that grin that he had, that kind of a boyish grin. I'm sure looking down from above and going, that's cool.
Yeah, I think he was. I think he's probably laughing at that one, definitely.
Yeah, absolutely. And I thought you did a great thing, too, when you asked Susie Weldon to get in the pace car with you to take the victory lap around the track with you and Ashley. I caught that and saw that going on, and I thought that was great, Dari. I got to tell you, man.
If Susie wanted to do it, I really wanted her to see the reaction from the crowd to Dan and the, you know, all those tributes that were out there. And I said to her, if you want to do it, Susie, please come. But if you don't, it's just fine with me. It's whatever you want to do. And it was really great, because my happiest memory of last year's race was seeing Dan and her and Dan's little sister Holly and Brian and the guys from his team on their parade lap afterwards. So it was nice that Susie could come with us.
You know, it's sad in a way and kind of fulfilling in another way that. Yeah, I remember your first win at Indianapolis. You and I talked the morning after that, and I told you the first thought that came into my mind that day when you crossed the start-finish line is, what would Greg Moore think? And you said, you know, I thought the same thing. And here it's another friend and a person we both knew. And, you know, in a way it makes it somewhat extra special when you're thinking of those people that meant so much to you, adding to what the Indianapolis 500 means. I mean, it just makes it even bigger, if that's a possibility.
I think you're very spot on there, Larry. I think with Memorial Day, an event like this, I do anyway, and I think most of the drivers and the teams, we think of the people we've lost, and especially with Greg and Dan, being fellow drivers, and Michael Wanzer, who, you know, my team manager Barry, his 6-year-old son who died of cancer days after Dan died last year. These are the things that were going through my mind and most of the team's mind yesterday, and it was great to be able to dedicate the race to those two.
Yeah, absolutely. Something I'll remember for a long time as well, your third Indianapolis 500 win. Has it soaked in yet that you're in that elite category and you're sitting now one win away from joining Al Unser Sr., A.J. Voigt, and Rick Mears as a four-time Indianapolis 500 champion?
No, it hasn't sunk in yet. Yeah, these things take a while, for me anyway. So, maybe tonight. I don't know. Last time it took about 4 or 5 months. 4 or 5 months to hit me. So we'll see what the next couple of weeks bring.
Let's talk about the change from last weekend in qualifying to the race on Sunday. I remember you going into the media center last Saturday afternoon, and I've never heard you so despondent. You were talking about a car and problems, and we can't figure it out. I don't know what's going on. I mean, you sounded so despondent, and yet you showed up. We saw it in Carburation Day on Friday, and then in the race, you and Scott both were strong from the get-go of this race. I mean, what changed from last weekend to race day?
Well, we were happy with the balance of the car, Larry, and we trimmed the thing out, we trimmed the thing out for qualifying, and the speed just wasn't there, and, you know, ultimately I think it showed we were at a disadvantage with the engines, and full credit to Honda, they told us, like, there's a new spec engine coming, everybody's putting, everybody has to put a new engine in for the race, so there's a new engine coming, and it's going to be better, and they worked very, very hard to close that gap, and they were a massive part of that, because that engine was very good, made great fuel mileage, and it was a lot happier in carb day when I was, you know, the car felt the same, but the speeds were a lot quicker, so that was very nice.
Yeah, I think we all saw that on carb day and just started looking at each other. Okay, they've been sandbagging here for the month of May, which has happened from time to time. But of course, you wanted to qualify a lot better than you did, obviously. No question about that. But boy, they did a job then in just a few days to get that done and put you in the position it was to win another Indianapolis 500, not only for yourself, but for Chip Ganassi. I mean, Chip's now won, and I always forget Juan Montoya's win, five times now at Indianapolis. That's pretty good.
Yeah. No, Chip's done a pretty good job, and he runs a great team, and I told him yesterday again, I love driving for the guy. I just love working with his organization, with the Target team. And, they're just such a motivated bunch. So, yeah, we'll keep swinging.
Okay, now everybody's been saying all season long, what's wrong with Dario? What's wrong with Dario? As you somewhat struggled. Okay, now you go out and you win the Indianapolis 500 for a third time, and you're really back in the points battle as there's a lot of racing to go. Do you get another one of these titles to add to the Indianapolis 500 win?
Well, it's a bit early to talk about that. You know, we've got a points deficit to close. We'll start trying to do that next week at Detroit on Sunday, see if we can do that. And, we'll get on with it. But you just got to take it one race at a time. And we're definitely a lot happier with the car in Brazil and, missed pole by several hundredths of a second. So we'll see what we can do.
What about coming back to Detroit? It's been a few years since, of course, the race was there on Belle Isle. You're very familiar with there. You were a winner back, when was it, 1999, I believe, if my memory is correct, at Belle Isle.
Yeah.
What about, a long time ago, what about coming back there and racing in front of the crowds? We're looking for an outstanding weekend.
No, I love racing in Belle Isle. It's great to come back to the Motor City, and the fact that Roger Penske is doing it and promoting the event, I think that says it all. It's going to be a first-class event, and good memories of there. As you said, I won the race in 99, but that's actually where Chip and I did our deal for me to come and drive the Target IndyCar. So I've got good memories of that, and looking forward to going back there and trying to do a good job.
Well, it should be a great time there, and I know there was another year that you probably could have won when Tony Kanaan wound up winning when Billy Rice ran out of fuel coming towards the end of the race. Remember that one?
Oh, I remember that one well. Dixie and I ended up parked in the wall together.
Yeah, I remember TK coming into victory lane. I was standing on the podium. He was looking up at me. I was looking at him, and we both were going, What happened here? Neither one of us knew. But it should be a fun time, and hopefully you'll get some rest between now and then. I know you've got busy schedule, travels, TV, all sorts of things to do, but it's well worth it to be tired and coming up to Detroit this next weekend after winning the Indianapolis 500. And again, Dario, my friend, congratulations. Couldn't happen to a nicer guy.
I appreciate it. Thank you, Larry.
Thanks, Dario. Now three-time Indianapolis 500 winner, Dario Franchitti. Great guy. I've known Dario since he started running in IndyCars, and his lovely wife, Ashley. I remember one time in Monterey, California, when I had been celebrating a little too much the night before in Cannery Row and with the likes of Tommy Kendall, and she came up as I was just in pain and wished me a very happy birthday. So that was nice to her, but congratulations to Dario. I look forward to seeing him face-to-face this weekend in Detroit. Well, next up, we'll turn our attention to another series that is going to be racing in Detroit on the island this weekend, the Grand Am Rolex Series. We'll talk to John Pugh, the co-driver of the number 60 Michael Shank Racing Machine, when we return to Pit Pass USA, part of the Power Motorsports Series on VoiceAmericaSports.com.
Internet flagship station for sports.
Voice America Sports.
If you want to talk about the East Coast sports scene, particularly from the Southeast, make sure you tune in to the Jeff Owen Show every Tuesday. Yeah, we'll talk about some of the other teams and news that's out there, but host Jeff Owens and co-host Tasha Humphrey know the inside and out of the Georgia college sports world, and they were born there, raised there, and still live the scene. We'll talk about every sport imaginable. Tune in on Tuesday at 7 p.m. East Coast time, 4 p.m. in the West, on the Voice America Sports Channel.
We some hard hitters. We some hard hitters.
Hard-hitting radio is a new kind of sports and entertainment show. Your hosts are NFL veterans Mark McMillan and co-host Byron Evans. It's an hour of hater-free radio every week. You'll hear interviews with top athletes, celebrities, coaches, and fans. It's humor, hits, and conversation. Hard-Hitting Radio is on with McMillan and Evans. Listen Fridays at 3 p.m. Pacific Time, 6 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Sports Network.
It's all Arizona, all over the world. If you're a local Arizona high school sports fan, or if you're a transplanted fan somewhere else in the world, have we got a show for you. The first internet sports radio talk show focusing solely on high school sports is The Coach's Corner with Scott Lovely. Tune in to talk about your favorite teams, players, or coaches. It's 100% Arizona high school sports coverage and a little bit more. Tune in Mondays at 4 p.m. Pacific Time, 7 p.m. Eastern, to the Voice America Sports Channel.
Your internet flagship station for sports, Voice America Sports.
You're listening to Pit Pass USA with Larry Henry. To leave comments or suggest future guests for the show, email us at larryhenry@pitpassusa.com. That's larryhenry@pitpassusa.com. Now, back to more of the fastest show in motorsports, Pit Pass USA, with Larry Henry.
As we mentioned earlier, the Detroit Grand Prix is back this year on Belle Isle. And one of the series that will be racing there this year is the Grand Am Rolex Series, and currently third in points. And they were the winners of the Rolex 24 to kick off the season. The number 60 Michael Schenck Racing with Curb Agajanian Ford Riley. And one of the two drivers that are behind the wheel of that machine joining me now, that is John Pugh. John, welcome, and a little belatedly, congratulations on the win back in January at Daytona.
Thank you very much. That was great for us, great for the team, great for Ford, and a dream come true for sure. It was a flawless race for everybody on the team. It was just perfect.
It got you started in the right direction. You're currently third in points, and you're coming off a podium finish last time out at New Jersey Motorsports Park.
Yeah, that was a good race. That was a good race for me and a good race for Oz. We didn't quite have it to get to the top step, but I'm very happy with that. Happy to be third in the points. It's very close. The point separation is within a couple points between the cars around us.
And when you say Oz, that's Oz Negri, who is your teammate with Michael Schenck Racing. And the two of you have been teammates for quite a while. And for those that don't understand sports car racing, Oz, of course, is what we would call the professional, and you are what we would call the gentleman driver, although a lot of drivers don't like using that term anymore because they put as much effort into it as the professionals do. And obviously, you're out there racing with all the professionals and doing a great job.
Yeah, I don't like that term either, but I prefer pro-am driver since I do other things as well. But I focus quite a bit, more than half my time on racing, and Oz, he works with me. I've known him for a long time. Yesterday, in fact, we were down at the Homestead Miami kart track, rearranging the track to make it like a street course. So it was a lot of fun, you know, getting inches off the walls there and trying to practice for Detroit. I'm very excited about it after that.
Speaking of street courses, I didn't realize this, that the Grand Am Rolex Series had not run on a street circuit since 2006 at Long Beach. So this is a really brand new for almost everyone.
Yeah, it's new for me. I mean, I've done it in an open wheel car back in Houston. That was the last time I did it, in a Star Mazda car, actually. But I never did it with Grand Am at Long Beach. But I look forward to it. I think it's a unique challenge, and it'll be good for the crowd, and it'll be very good TV.
Oh, I think it'll be absolutely outstanding TV. But this many cars between the number of cars that we have in the Daytona prototype and, of course, the GT cars, it's going to be a very busy track with 14 turns in just a little over 2 miles.
Yeah, it's going to be very busy. And some of the slow corners and chicanes, it'll be hard to pass the GTs because they're almost as fast as us in a short distance. We'll have to get them on the straightaway and in the braking zone. But it'll be very interesting, and getting the GTs between you and the DP behind you is the key.
And, John, this is a very big weekend. I see it for the Grand Am Rolex Series. You are in the automotive capital of the world, Detroit. It is a spectacular event. I know you probably haven't been there and seen it since the resurrection. Unfortunately, it's been gone the last few years because of the economy, but coming back. But an island setting with the skyline in the background, and it's just a beautiful place. This is a really big weekend for the Grand Am Rolex Series.
Oh, it is, and I haven't been to Detroit in actually 40 years. I grew up in Michigan, and it's just a couple hours away in Grand Rapids, but I remember Detroit back then. I remember sailing by Belle Isle on the lake, so It's been a long time, and I look forward to getting back there. That's going to be great.
Yeah, we're talking to John Pugh, who is the co-driver of the number 60 Michael Schenck Racing with Kurt Agajanian Ford Riley in the Can-Am Rolex Series Daytona prototype car running this weekend, of course, in Detroit. And, John, you mentioned that sailing, you are from Grand Rapids, but you sail a lot. I saw we're over 100,000 miles of sailing you've done.
Yeah, it seems crazy, but when my wife and I were quite a bit younger, we took off on a sailboat a good 30 years ago before they had fancy navigation and all that kind of thing, and a small 38-foot boat, and took off from Florida to New Zealand and using the stars only for navigation. So it was kind of crazy. We spent a lot of time in the South Pacific, North Pacific, back in the Atlantic, and raised our small children on a boat for a little while, too. We went back and forth between that and land. But then it became a certain point in our life where we had to stop doing that. Obviously, you can't do that forever. But it was fun, and racing was my new passion. It was always kind of my passion as a child, so it was great to get into it later in life where I could do it.
Since you are a Grand Rapids, Michigan native, did you ever do the Port Huron to Mackinac race?
I did not, no. I did not, but I learned to sail on the Great Lakes.
Well, obviously, a lot of people do. When you're surrounded by water, as Michigan is, and I lived in Michigan for 24 years, boating becomes a way of life in that state. And there are lakes everywhere in that state, even outside of Lake Michigan, Lake Erie, Lake Superior, going up to the north side and all. This weekend, what are you looking to do? You already talked about your preparation that you and Oz did the go-kart track down at Homestead Miami Speedway. But how do you get set up for a weekend? You have limited practice time, brand new facility, and concrete walls on both sides.
Yeah, that's the hard part to get around. I've been watching quite a lot of YouTube videos of ALMS races and IndyCar races there to get a feel for it. But it's going to be a very short learning curve there. And I think our engineers are pretty good. I think we'll get the car pretty close right away, and hopefully it'll be good. And the walls don't really bother me. It adds a little of excitement to it. You have to be very, very precise, which I like doing. I like that aspect of it. The hard part, I think, will be just dealing with traffic.
Well, there's going to be plenty of that, no question about it. And also, qualifying becomes very important. And you've been qualifying the car and doing quite well.
Yeah, it's going to be extremely important here to qualify in a good position, because passing may be difficult. I think it will be difficult. And the pressure's on. I got to get to it right away as fast as I can, and I think we can do it.
John, what do you do besides racing? And I brought up the gentleman driver thing, which, again, I need to change that to the pro-am and get away from that thinking, but I also know you were the, you know, Jim Truman Award multiple winner, which is a great honor, having known Jim Truman when he was alive. But what else do you do? Do you do more racing than the Daytona prototypes and the Rolex series, or is this how you feed that animal inside of you, the competitive nature?
No, this is how I do it. I do go-karting. I have done go-kart racing frequently off-season, and I like that. It's a good, very competitive way to stay in shape. But for other things that I do manage investments for other people and my family, and that's what I do.
Going back to, I mentioned it earlier about winning the Rolex 24 this year, how big a moment was that for you, standing on that stage, raising the trophy, getting the Rolex watches with everybody after winning the biggest sports car race that they have in the Can-Am Rolex Series and one of the iconic endurance races in the world?
Yeah, it was overwhelming. I mean, I've been with Schenck for a few years. We've been close a couple of times, and I know how little things can make a huge difference in a race like that. And the last 3 hours when AJ was driving the car was one of the most stressful moments in my life, because I knew and know from past experience, one little thing, you know, one little drop of a wheel nut or changing tires or hit a piece of carbon on the track, and, you know, you're not going to win the race. But everything, went really, really smoothly. It was like a jazz band playing and everybody working together without talking to each other. It just flowed. It was really an amazing thing. And to be up there on the podium, I was in shock. I was in shock for a couple of weeks.
I can understand that. And, of course, Michael Shank also got his head somewhat shaved by putting AJ's logo, as he had promised to do, at his, on his hairline after winning down at the Rolex 24. But you're also in the middle of this points battle. What would it mean to win the championship, too? I mean, this thing is as close as I've seen in a long time. But even the Ganassi guys are farther back. No, not that far back, but they're not leading the thing, which is unusual.
Yeah, that is unusual. I know that would be huge to win the championship, especially for a pro-am team. And actually, the other pro-am drivers in the DP field are very tough, too. So it's the whole level right now is very, very high, and the quality is very high. So to be up where we are, I'm very proud of. And if we were to win it, I'd feel like another Daytona 24.
Yeah, I mean, when you look at it with Starworks, which, of course, is another Ford team leading the way right now, but they're only four up. On the SunTrust team, then you are right there. You look at another one of the teams that's there. And when you look at Mimo Rojas and Scott Pruitt, which is the Ganassi team, they're only 9 points back. These are the guys that are the perennial champions. This thing, anyone can win it. And it looks like it's just going to be one of the most historic battles they've had in years.
Yeah, it'll be exciting. And for the whole season, you have to think big picture. You can't just go crazy every single race and put it off or have a problem and get the least amount of points per race. So you have to be very consistent and do the best you can and push as hard as you can and take some chances. But, you know, at the end of the day, you want the points.
Absolutely. Well, John, I'm looking forward to watching the race in real time up on the Raceway of Belle Isle this weekend, and I'm sure the fans are going to enjoy it, and I think the drivers will enjoy it when all is said and done, too. Congratulations on what you've accomplished so far this season, and we look forward to seeing you in action on Saturday.
Yeah, thank you, Larry. I can't wait to get back to Michigan.
John Pugh, who co-drives with Oz Negri in the Michael Shank Racing Ford Riley Daytona Prototype in the Can-Am Rolex Series. Of course, they are running in Detroit. They'll have the GT Group also there. It should be very, very exciting. I remember the American Le Mans Series race there a few years ago when this race was being held, and they put on a great battle in LMP1, so we'll see what the Daytona Prototypes and the GTs can do. Also running in Belle Isle will be the Pirelli World Challenge, and we'll talk to a gentleman who knows the track well because he raced there before in the Corvette Racing team. This time he'll be driving Cadillac. That's Johnny O'Connell. When we return to Pit Pass USA, part of the Power Motorsports Series at VoiceAmericaSports.com.
School to the pros, we cover everything. Let your voice be heard. Voice America Sports.
Play ball. If you're looking to talk baseball, even in the offseason, look no further than the King's Corner, talking baseball with former World Series champion Jim Leyritz. Jim's known for a rather controversial stance during his show. He's brutally honest and ready to talk with current and former players, owners, and other key figures to bring you baseball from an insider's view. You won't want to miss a single episode. The King's Corner, talking baseball with Jim Leyritz, is heard every Thursday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific on the Voice America Sports Channel.
Lockdown Coverage.
Get ready to talk sports with the big guys. Tune in to Lockdown Coverage with Keith Lewis every Tuesday for the inside and outside of the business of sports. Keith and his guests will provide expert commentary and answer all of your burning questions about your favorite team, the players, and what's next. It's time to have fun with the game. Listen for Lockdown Coverage with Keith Lewis and his favorite co-hosts every Tuesday at noon Pacific Time, 3 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Sports Channel. The talk doesn't get any hotter.
Ready for in-your-face sports? Want to talk about the topics that nobody else is willing to talk about, either because they're too scared to touch them or just don't think it's the way to go? You're not going to be shy here. Tune in to Here's the Deal with Mega and Steel, featuring Ike Mega Griffin and Sydney Steel Justice. We've got the facts to back up the talk and invite you to join us every Friday at 2 p.m. Pacific Time, 5 p.m. Eastern, just before the weekend on the Voice America Sports Channel. We tell it like it is.
Your internet flagship station for sports, Voice America Sports.
You're listening to Pit Pass USA with Larry Henry. To leave comments or suggest future guests for the show, email us at LarryHenry@PitPassUSA.com. That's LarryHenry@PitPassUSA.com. Now, back to more of the fastest show in motorsports, Pit Pass USA with Larry Henry.
This weekend, the Chevrolet Detroit Belle Isle Grand Prix returns to Belle Isle, which is an island in the middle of the Detroit River near downtown Detroit. And one of the many series that are going to be racing, and I'm really looking forward to it, is the Pirelli World Challenge Sports Car Series. And joining me now is the points leader, the man that knows the racetrack pretty well because he used to run there with Corvette Racing when the America Le Mans Series ran, and that is Johnny O'Connell, the current points leader. Johnny, welcome.
Hey, Larry, thanks for having me on.
You're going to be looking forward to coming back to Detroit. Ran well there when you were running with Corvette Racing, and it's always spectacular to race in Detroit in the shadow of your boss's headquarters, GM World headquarters. You can see it from the racetrack.
Yeah, you know what? It is an amazing event, you know, and of course we won there with the Corvette, so now that I'm racing with Cadillac, I'm looking forward to getting back there, but it's a little bit of an ominous feeling, you know, when you're racing there and then you see, you know, GM headquarters in the rents and you know that all the eyes of corporate are on you, so you better drive well.
Yeah, and also Pratt & Miller, of course, who handles the cars and handled the Corvette team just down the road in New Hudson. It's really a home track event for everybody.
It is. You know, and Pratt & Miller, everybody, Cadillac, they're all going to be coming out and cheering us on. And you know, you can't say enough about, you know, the guys at Cadillac Racing. They, you know, last year was our first year in the series. You know, I was fortunate to finish second last year. And I say fortunate because, you know, we had absolutely no development time with the car. Now, this year, you know, the engine guys, the chassis guys, all the engineers have really given us a great race car. So, you know, we're optimistic about our chances at Detroit.
Yeah, you and your Cadillac CTS-VR teammate Andy Pilgrim won two of the points coming into Detroit, so obviously the program's been running well.
Oh, it's been running real well. But, you know, and here's one of the most challenging aspects of World Challenge Racing is that as you do well, as you, you know, get wins, seconds and thirds, the series adds weight to you. Which, so, you know, both Andy and I want to say, at Detroit are going to be carrying an extra 120 pounds. And the reason they do that is so that the guys that are finishing, you know, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh might have an opportunity to win. But when you're the guy, you know, with all that extra weight in your car, you're not enjoying it.
How does the team adjust to that, though, and especially in a place like Detroit, which is a very, very tight circuit? I try to compare it with Long Beach, but Long Beach has two long straightaways, and there's not really long straightaways in Detroit.
Yeah, you know what? In all honesty, you know, the Cadillac is a long wheelbase car, and so on big race tracks like Mossport or Road Atlanta or Elkhart Lake, you know, our car is amazing. But on the tighter circuits like Long Beach, and for the most part, you know, Detroit is the tightest racetrack that we will race on all year. That kind of, you know, track will really tend to favor a Porsche a little bit more than us because they have the engine in the back, which, and a shorter wheelbase, which allows them to rotate in the tighter corners a little bit tough. But that said, you know, my teammate Andy Pilgrim at Long Beach was able to win. And, you know, and I ended up finishing third there. So, you know, again, we're going to have to push really hard this weekend to get a win, but to do so in front of, you know, in front of headquarters is an important thing.
Well, also, there are two categories in the Pirelli World Challenge. There are the GT, which you run in. There are 16 entries. There are 23 in GTS. That means 39 cars are scheduled to start this thing on that racetrack. That's a mob.
Yeah, you know it is, but you know when I drove for Corvette, the program manager there was a guy named Doug Feehan, and Doug had, you know, three rules, which were don't hit anybody, don't break anything, and stay on the racetrack. And if you do that, good things happen. And you know, more so than any other circuit, I think Detroit, we're going to have to keep that in the back of our mind because of the amount of traffic. You know, the Detroit fans that went to the race in 2007 and 2008 to watch the American Le Mans Series, you know, that's a multi-class series. You know, you have four different classes there. Well, here we have two different classes. So what happens is you have our cars, which are the GT cars, very, very fast, and then the GTS cars that are cars like the Camaro and Mustang, and there's a Kia and Acura. You know, they're playing there, but they're slower. So what that means to the fans is that it's guaranteed there's going to be passing pretty much the entire race.
And the other thing you do, which is somewhat unusual, standing starts, which just scares the total bejeebers out of me, because the first turn past the start-finish line is not that far away. And I remember a Trans Am race several years ago there. They didn't make it through the first turn.
Yeah, well, we're better than them. You know, I, you know what? I got to tell you, if you ask all drivers, you know, almost every driver I know would say, yeah, I love standing starts. You know, there's just something about being sitting still, getting your car on the rev limiter, and then, you know, when the lights go out, just going, you know, full tilt boogie as fast as you can. It's unbelievably exciting. But sometimes, you know, guys do have problems. But, you know, again, the excitement level of starting a race that way is, you can't even put it into words. And, so, you know, but yeah, I know the Detroit track well. And, you know, funneling into that first, you know, right-left combination might be a little bit dicey, you know, which is just one thing that, you know, means that you have to qualify well. If you can be in the first row or second row, you're making your job a whole lot easier.
I mentioned Trans Am a moment ago, and I really think when I watch the Pirelli World Challenge, it reminds me of the halcyon days of Trans Am. Great cars, great competition throughout the field, and everyone can recognize the cars and back their favorite machine. I really love it.
Well, you know, and Larry, you know, if you go back to the heyday of Trans Am, which would have been, you know, the mid to late 80s, when you had Ford, you had Chevrolet, you had, actually, you know, I want to say Audi was in there for a while. So you have these different manufacturers involved. And the reason they do that is to showcase their technology. You know, for Cadillac, you know, there's a lot of reasons for us to race this car. One is to, you know, highlight the performance aspects of the CTS-V. Okay, but another thing that goes on, there's a direct relationship between racing and production. And there are times that we can go to production and say, wow, you know what, we would really like to see this on the next generation car because it'll allow us on the racetrack. And there are times where, you know, we have problems where we call upon them to help us. So it's a great relationship. But, you know, I've always said, you know, there's a reason why Mercedes races, BMW races, and Audi races. And that's that they understand that connection between performance and luxury and the consumer. And it is really based on that Cadillac is racing. And the same thing holds true, you know, for the Corvette guys. You know, people that are buying performance cars, whether it's a luxury performance car like the CTS-V or a strictly performance car like the Corvette, they want to see that racing heritage. They want to know, you know, that there's something that gives credentials to their streetcar.
Now, I know you're enjoying what you're doing here, running on the Cadillac team in the Pirelli World Challenge, but how much do you miss being in that bright yellow Corvette? I know they're over at Le Mans getting ready for testing over there and not running in that.
Well, of course you miss that. You know, I mean, I had such amazing success at Corvette. You know, I've got the most wins of anyone in history in the Corvette. I've got the most wins, you know, at Le Mans for an American. I mean, I was able to set so many, you know, records, you know, driving that car. And of course you miss it. I miss, you know, being teamed with Jan Magnussen. You know, Jan and I were best buddies. And, you know, we had great amounts of success together. But, you know, I got to tell you, this Cadillac program is great. And there's a very high level of excitement around it, not just within the race team, but, you know, amongst all the executives that are associated with it. And so, you know, again, I was at Corvette at the right time, which was, you know, they hadn't really, you know, allowed themselves or grown into the dominant team that you know, we then became. So to be a part of that was awesome. And now, you know, I think when they looked at this Cadillac program, they were like, here's a guy that can get this program up, going, and winning. And so I was, you know, I was honored that they chose me for it, but also saddened because, you know, I mean, that Corvette is one great race car. And you know what? I'm not at Le Mans. And you certainly miss that.
Yeah, but you're going to be in Detroit, and it's going to be beautiful in the water and the island and everything that's going on this weekend. It's just going to be fabulous.
Yeah. Well, we should call it the Baja Detroit Grand Prix because I actually went out for a photo shoot in January, and it's a bumpy racetrack. And what does that mean to the competitors? And well, that means that the engineers have a challenge because, you know, normally you want to run a race car pretty stiff. But when you're on a super bumpy circuit, you know, like Detroit is, you've got to raise your ride heights, get the floor of the car up higher so that you're not bottoming out. And also you run a softer spring package so that you're, you know, putting power down. And so there's going to be a lot of challenges for us. And what's pretty cool is that this weekend we're going to have two races. We're going to have a race on Saturday and the race on Sunday. So it's going to be a busy weekend of racing for everybody at Cadillac.
Yeah, and that's great because the fans that are there Saturday maybe aren't coming back on Sunday. They get a chance to see you in the afternoon, and then Sunday morning before the IndyCars take the track in the afternoon, you're going to be back out there again and have some other fans to expose what the Pirelli World Challenge is all about.
Well, yeah, and we're excited about it. I mean, one of the great things is, you know, manufacturers need a place to play. And yes, they can do that in NASCAR, and yes, they can do that in IndyCar, but not really as directly against their competition as what happens in World Challenge. I mean, we are, you know, racing against, our cars look like a Cadillac. The Porsche looks like the Porsche, the Corvette. You know, you've got manufacturer involvement, not just from us, but from Volvo, from Nissan, from Porsche, Kia and Acura are highly involved in it. So it's a great place for manufacturers to showcase, you know, their product and how competitive they are.
I'm looking forward to the entire weekend on Belle Isle, and I'll see you trackside this weekend, Johnny.
Awesome, Larry. I'm looking forward to it, and you know, we won there in 2008, and it sure would be nice to win again in 2012.
Johnny O'Connell will be driving the number 3 Cadillac CTS VR in the Pirelli World Challenge. They'll run two races this weekend at the Chevrolet Detroit Belle Isle Grand Prix, and it should be very interesting with those standing starts as we talked about in our interview, because right after the start-finish line, it's a right followed by a left, concrete walls on both sides. Yeah, that's going to be fun with the number of cars they have, and it's great to see Johnny there. I saw him there before, of course, in the Corvettes. And the guy's won the Le Mans 24 three different times in his career, and I had a chance to also work with him last year when I worked with the America Le Mans series, so I got to see him on almost every race weekend. He was doing TV, and I was doing the announcing for the series, and a great, great guy. Hey, anybody that lives in Flowery Branch, Georgia, can't be all bad, can he? Next up, we're going to turn our attention to NASCAR. The new Hall of Fame induction class just announced, and we'll talk to the second half of the Wood Brothers, who's going in to join his brother Glenn, Leonard Wood, up next when we return to Pit Pass USA, part of the Power Motorsports Series on VoiceAmericaSports.com.
Your internet flagship station for sports, Voice America Sports.
Tune in to a show about making a comeback and what really goes on behind the scenes with your favorite athletes and beyond. Listen for The Comeback Radio Show with Tony Farmer. A lot of people believe what they read on the internet, hear and see in the media, and on the news. We're going to give our guests a chance to tell the real story without the extra hype. It's not just sports, although that will be a focal point of the program. We'll also look at the world of celebrities, music, modeling, and more. Listen every Thursday at 10 a.m. Pacific Time, 1 p.m. Eastern on Voice America Sports.
Fantasy sports is where the action really is. Over 40 million people play fantasy sports, but rarely do they get to quiz the experts. Fantasy Insights is the name and the game. Tune in every week as Dish Adams and his guests clue you in on the fantasy football game, what's happening on and off the field, and how it will affect your fantasy team. These experts aren't just beat writers assigned to fantasy football. They live and breathe the game. Tune in to Fantasy Insights with Dish Adams every Thursday afternoon at 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern on Voice America Sports.
Okay, sports fans, here's your opportunity to discuss football, America's favorite sport. On an annual basis, millions of people attend, watch, and listen to football, both pro and college. Ray Ellis Sports, an internet talk radio show, was developed with the fan in mind. Join host former Philadelphia Eagles and Cleveland Browns strong safety, Ray Ellis, on Voice America Sports every Tuesday at 1 p.m. Pacific for exciting, interactive football discussions from the fans' perspective. Tune in every Tuesday at 1 p.m. Pacific to Ray Ellis Sports, right here on the Voice America Network. And let's talk football.
Your internet flagship station for sports, Voice America Sports. You're listening to Pit Pass USA with Larry Henry. To leave comments or suggest future guests for the show, email us at LarryHenry@PitPassUSA.com. That's LarryHenry@PitPassUSA.com. Now, back to more of the fastest show in motorsports, Pit Pass USA, with Larry Henry.
The new class of inductees into the NASCAR Hall of Fame just announced it. As expected, and as it should be, the Wood brothers are in the NASCAR Hall of Fame. Glenn Wood going in last year, and Leonard Wood voted in this year. Leonard joins us now, and congratulations. Everyone knew this was coming, but until they officially say it, you got to wonder.
Oh, yeah. Well, I was very excited, you know, that Glenn and I always did things together, and to go in right behind him is very rewarding. And then our great drivers, David Pearce and Cale Yarber, going in right ahead of us. So, yeah, it's been fun. They kept me running pretty good Sunday.
What's it like for you, though, going to the NASCAR Hall of Fame, that your peers and all of those that have followed NASCAR have honored both you and your brother in this way?
Well, it's very special because, you know, we've raced against all these guys that's nominated and in the Hall of Fame and recognized in the Hall of Fame. We started 1 year after NASCAR was formed, so we've seen most of them and raced against most of them.
Well, you not only raced against most of them, you won against most of them. You were the chief mechanic on the team. You won 96 races, 117 poles in 900 races as a crew chief. That's a pretty good record.
Well, it's we are very thankful that we had the world's greatest drivers driving for us, and we've raced Fords ever since we started. We've never raced anything else, and very proud of that.
Obviously so, and all that you have done, and to still be racing today, I mean, that's got to mean so much to you and Glenn also, that the Wood brothers are still there and still in NASCAR and still competing.
Well, you know, I want to give a lot of credit to my nephews, Ed and Lynn. You know, they worked right by my side back in the 70s with Pearson and Cale and A.J. Fort and Gurney and all of them. But anyway, they have been, they were just one on one side and one on the other. I had like two extra sets of hands helping me all the time. And you know, since I've backed out of it some, I'm still involved with it. I go work Monday through Friday, but they've kept this thing going, and we've seen so many big teams, sponsors go away, and then we're still here. That's the main thing.
Absolutely. There was a story I was reading, and everyone knows about all the great things that you came up with, the innovative ideas along the way that we're still seeing in racing today. But it was back when you were a small child that you built your own car out of different parts that you cobbled together?
This guy had a motor on a bicycle, you know, as a kid that you'd buy and put it on that. And I just wanted something with the motor to pull me along, so I just made me ended up being a go-kart looking thing, but that was long before go-karts was made. But I didn't have any money. Just went to the junkyard and junk pieces and put it all together and ended up with a car. My brother-in-law gave me a quarter horsepower washing machine motor that his dad had before they had electricity, and then they got electricity, they took it off, and he gave me the motor, and so I put it to use.
Well, obviously, this was how you got started in all that you did in racing at a very young age. I think I saw where you were like 8 or 9 years old when you were doing this. I mean, you got started very early.
I was carving little cars out of a solid block of wood like it's 7 years old, but I made this go-kart when I was about 13, and I tell this story that Glenn Ray and Leo and Clay, my brothers, they haul lumber, and there's a big rivalry going between Ford and Chevrolet at that time, which could haul the biggest load, So when racing came along, we were ready to go.
Well, absolutely, with all that you have done over the years. Is there one moment that stands out? I guess it's kind of hard to pick one in all of the great things you have done since this team started over 60 years ago.
Well, I guess the Daytona 500 stands out in my mind. You know, the 63 500 with Donnie Lund winning, and then David Pearson in 7-6. And then Cale in 68. And then going to Indianapolis and pitting Jim Clark, Ford Motor Company wanted us to go pit Clark's car because it had like that new double overhead cam Ford engine in it, and they wanted us to come up and pit it, so we kind of hit a home run on that deal.
Yeah, I think so. When you win the Indianapolis 500, you did it in two pit stops. No one thought you could do what you did. The tires were fantastic, obviously, on the car that day. But to have done that, you got a lot of notoriety in that. And you also helped NASCAR. You were really the first ones that brought a lot of attention outside of the NASCAR world to NASCAR with that effort with Jim Clark's car, because they went, well, maybe we should pay attention to these guys. They seem to know what they're doing down there in NASCAR.
Big Bill France was setting up the grandstand. He said, "That's my boys."
You were there when all the drivers that we think back to and teams that made NASCAR what it is, I mean, they're legendary, and the names are bigger than life. What's it like to be a part of that and then to watch the new era today? Everyone talks about the great, and they are. They're young, they're great, they're fast, they do incredible things behind the wheel. But to be back there in those days when the names, you just talk about them, and even today, young fans that know the history of NASCAR look up and go, wow, they're really impressed by what those gentlemen did during the years. And, of course, you were part of them. I mean, what was it like to be a part of that?
Well, you know, Glenn and I and his partner, Chris Williams, were riding down the road when we first started, and he made mention, says, "Well, what we got to do is get some fame." But what you was talking about, the thing that we'd see these drivers, these great drivers, and not only just meet them and see them, we raced against them and got to know them very closely, and then we had the best drivers in the world driving for us over the time. I think I've crew chiefed about 35 or so, but now we've had 75 drivers driving our cars. To meet those guys and work with them and talk to them and go to dinner with them, it's just unbelievable, beyond what I would ever dreamed of when we started out.
Well, Leonard, there is no doubt that you and your brother Glenn deserve to be in the NASCAR Hall of Fame, and it's as it should be, because it's not a Wood brother, it's the Wood brothers, and that sums up what the whole family operation has been from day one. It continues to this day, and I think all is right in the NASCAR world today.
Yeah, I was so proud of him going in last year, and I definitely wanted him to go in ahead of me. But someone asked me, did I think I had a chance of getting in this time? And I said, well, I thought 62 years of racing ought to get us at least one vote.
Absolutely. It should get you all the votes. I'm surprised it wasn't unanimous. I wonder who did not vote for you to go into the NASCAR Hall of Fame. But, Leonard, I want to congratulate you again, Glenn, the entire family operation, for all that you have done for racing and continue to do for racing. Congratulations.
Well, I thank you very much, and I want to thank Edsel Ford and his sons. They were supportive in this last Trevor Bayne win at Daytona. And that about tops them all. I mean, it was the most celebrated winner's circle ever, you know, winning Ford's 600th win, and Edsel and his three sons being there, and I just appreciate his friendship so much.
NASCAR Hall of Fame inductee Leonard Wood going in a year after his brother Glenn made it in, and I think it's, well, it's well-deserving that the Wood brothers are both in the NASCAR Hall of Fame. I'm just amazed it was not a unanimous vote. It was under 60%, I think, of the voters had Leonard Wood. I mean, it should be obvious. It should be a no-brainer. It should be 100%. I cannot believe that with the Wood brothers being there since the start of NASCAR, what they have done. You take a look at what Leonard, the innovations he had, the jacks, the fueling, just all the various things that he has done in racing, the air wrenches they use. I mean, he worked on those. It's just so many things they did. I don't know how anybody could not have made him the unanimous choice to go into the NASCAR Hall of Fame, but well-deserving, as are the other ones, including Rusty Wallace and Buck Baker. I just name a couple of the other guys that are going into the NASCAR Hall of Fame. So that's it. I could sit and talk to Leonard all day long with all the great stories and the various things that he has done in his lifetime and the people that he has known. I'd like to thank Mr. Wood for taking time out of his schedule to talk with me. Also, my other guests today, Johnny O'Connell, John Pugh, and my good friend Dario Franchitti, talking to me after his big win at the Indianapolis 500. And he's only $2.5 million richer, thanks to the victory in Indianapolis. Maybe I can mooch a buck or two off of him this weekend at the Chevrolet Detroit Belle Isle Grand Prix. And if you're in the Detroit area, or if you're over in Canada, love to see you at the racetrack this weekend. It's going to be a fun, fun time. I'm glad it is back. Even though I don't live in Detroit these days, I did work there for 24 years and taken in a lot of the races, including ones that were downtown around the Renaissance Center. So thank all of them for joining me. Thank you for listening. Don't forget, you can always email me at LarryHenry@PitPassUSA.com, LarryHenry@PitPassUSA.com, and Twitter is PitPassUSA. We will see you next week back here on Pit Pass USA, part of the Power Motorsports Series on VoiceAmericaSports.com.
For this week, time to get ready for another great week of racing to talk about next time on Pit Pass. Tune in next Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, for another fast-paced 200-mile-per-hour edition of Pit Pass USA with Larry Henry on Power Up, your motorsports channel.